welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the weekly show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK charity championing integrative medicine for cancer, a rounded, whole person style of care that addresses the needs of body, mind and spirit. I'm very excited about today's interview as I'm going to be speaking to two people. That's Dr. Ron Hunning-Hackey, Medical Director of the Riordan Clinic in Kansas, USA, and Dr. Kirsten West, naturopathic oncologist who works with Dr. Hunning-Hackey at the clinic. And we're going to be diving into what Dr. Hunning-Hackey calls whole brain medicine, a deeply fascinating view of how we could care for people's well-being. Hi, Ron and Kirsten.
Robin, hello. Good to see you.
Hi, Robin.
I'm really excited to welcome you both to the Yes to Life show today. Kirsten, of course, you're a returning guest, which I'm absolutely delighted about, but it's the first time I've had the pleasure to interview you, Dr. Ron. We met last year when you so kindly invited me to speak at your Cancer Care Reimagined conference in Wichita, and at that event, you spoke on one of my favourite topics. Your talk was entitled The Third Medical Revolution, Reimagining Whole Brain Medicine. So just to give us a bit of context for what we're going to be talking about today, what are you citing as the first and the second medical revolutions? And broadly speaking, what are you referring to when you say whole brain medicine?
Yeah, so it goes way back that medicine, you know, goes back to the Greeks. And there, that was pre-revolution. That was just medicine.
Right.
But there was the kind of left brain kind of, where you got into the details of medicine, and that was part of the scientific revolution that occurred, I think, in the 16th, 17th century, where we really decided that medicine was about facts and looking at the details. And thank goodness that we have many amazing things has happened and continues to happen in modern medicine. But then about 20 years ago, I read a book on the second medical revolution, which was really about getting the holistic part of the brain working. The right brain is more holistic and looks at the big picture. And back then, when Dr. Riordan started the Riordan Clinic, we were thinking that was the missing piece. We needed a holistic foundation to the specifics. So the left and the right brain needed to start communicating with each other is basically what I was trying to get at there. And then at the conference, I brought in another anatomical component, namely the corpus callosum, which does join the two brains. But unfortunately, the corpus callosum can interfere with communication, but it can also facilitate communication. And so what we want is to get that broad communication going between the two sides of the brain so that we get what I call whole brain medicine, true whole brain medicine. And that, I think, will help us with the huge challenges that we have these days in the field of healthcare. So it's a kind of a way of envisioning people starting to talk together, because, you know, there are people that want to just look at just nutrition, but we also need to look at the science of oncology in combining that with nutrition and also looking at the whole person. How can we treat the whole person and not just the tumor?
Excellent. Great. So I remember you were talking about medicines having two aspects. The one that seemed to me to be describing entirety of Western medicine, the illness fixer, you called it. but also another that's got long historical roots, but it's in the ascendant, I think, at the moment, which is the wellness keeper. Now, Kirsten, I think you would say that your work predominantly centers in this arena. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, naturopathic medicine is all about what makes me well instead of what makes me sick. And I think that we're still, unfortunately, very stuck in the institutionalized medical model, the biomedical model, which was really the first medical revolution.
Right.
And we did get great. I mean, we got wonderful things from it. We got antibiotics, sterile surgery, anesthesia. Those are all things that we needed. But we've really gotten away from looking at the whole person and focusing on the body as a machine, which is that mind-body dualism. When in truth, we're starting to realize that there's so much more to health. And studies have shown there's a whole field called psychoimmunology, We have the biopsychosocial model, which shows that everything in our lives, our social communication, stress, our sense of purpose, truly affects how healthy we are.
Yeah, fascinating. Yeah, this joining up of everything that's been happening in recent years is pretty heartening stuff. I think we've become pretty fragmented. Yeah, another sort of clear divide between these two aspects of medicine, it could be captured by the words mechanistic and holistic. You were referring a bit to this, Ron, earlier. I wondered if you'd just like to clarify a bit more now. You started to talk about it in terms of the human brain and, you know, how these two views, if you like, relate to the human brain.
Yeah, one of the other speakers at our conference was Nasha Winters, and she wrote The Metabolic Approach to Cancer. And really, that's looking at all these different terrains. And so we can think in terms of relationships as being a factor, which most oncologists don't ask you, well, how are you getting along with your spouse? You know, that's that nevertheless could be a major factor. So we also think in terms now of sleep, you know, that sleep is a really important thing. And diet obviously is not covered in conventional medicine, not specifically. It's coming in more and more than what it did, environmental toxins. So with Nasha's book, she basically opened up the thinking that there were many components that go into the calculus of cancer. Cancer is not just the tumor. It's the fact that something in the body has gone awry and the defenses against cancer have gotten weaker, and the cancer has shown up. And so, of course, we want to get rid of the tumor. But if we don't address the underlying factors that allowed the tumor to emerge, we haven't done a full job for the cancer patient.
Setting them up for a repeat. Yeah. Okay. So I think we'll all agree that there's some pretty clear consequences to the wholesale adoption of the mechanistic illness fixer as our healthcare model. Kirsten, do you want to just explain what you think these consequences are when you look at the general health of the population as we have it now? How do these relate to our approach to healthcare?
Well, I think we're having a meteoric rise in metabolic issues, which is truly the foundation of so many of our chronic illnesses now, cancer, depression, autoimmune disease, it's addiction. There's so much that's going on that it's not a one fix, and we've learned that. And so we're coming up against a wall, and people are getting sicker with this mechanistic model that we're stuck in. And so treating this more like a complex disease, looking at the whole person, is how we're going to get people well. And how we do that is really the question, because we are very stuck in, and we need research, but we're very stuck in that one fix, one size model still.
Mm. And of course, you know, that's not to overlook the fact it's extraordinarily successful when it comes particularly to mechanistic things. You know, my sister's just had her hip replaced. Genius stuff. I mean, you know, a hip that went was the end of your life, pretty much. You're on the downhill slope after that, not very long ago. And this stuff is like, yeah, it's routine now. And those sort of, you know, mechanical fixes, things that can be just fixed with surgery, say, are amazing what they can do now to eyes and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, as Ron said, we need this stuff, but it's when it gets applied with too broad a brush to any old illness that we seem to get into trouble.
We just can't rely on it only. And that was the whole premise of Dr. Ron's talk, is that we need the right brain as well. We need the right brain to guide the left brain. And the left brain is that precision, that analytical, that let's pinpoint what we need to do here to make this better. But we can't forget about the right brain that looks at the whole person as well.
Okay. So back to your talk, Ron. I remember you brought in the hugely important work of Dr. Ian McGilchrist in identifying the contribution that these two opposing views of the universe, views that we as humans embody both of, what they've made. And importantly, he describes the right relationship between these two sides of the brain, which he encapsulated in the title of his well-known book, The Master and His Emissary. I wonder if you expand a bit on the relationship between the right and the left brain.
Yeah, the right brain he describes as the master, because really it's where we get the big picture, and we absolutely need to keep the big picture in mind, because we're deluding ourselves if we get too narrow in our thinking. But what he says happens is the master has sent the emissary to do very important things. And in the process of doing those important things, left brain types of things, in terms of looking at cancer and the understanding of cancer, in terms of the different types of cancers, the different treatments, the left brain is incredibly important. But then the emissary, after a while, thinks it's it. That's it. That's all you need, is just tell what type of cancer it is. Here's the treatment. Let's get about that business. And what's forgotten is that the big picture is a necessary part of a successful treatment of a cancer patient, in my opinion, and the book's opinion.
Mm.
He talked about the bird, Robin. Do you remember the bird?
I do. Go on, tell us.
The bird. I think that he described it so well. So you've got the little bird, and the bird needs the left brain to be able to look at food and decide, is this edible? Is this not edible? What am I focused on right now? But then that's the emissary. That's the left side. And Dr. Ron explained a little bit why it's the emissary. We'll get there in a little bit more. But then the master is the right brain. And the right brain is, okay, yeah, I'm paying attention to this food, but there's a giant eagle that's coming that's about to eat me. What's going on in my environment? So we can't just be so focused on the analytic precision based if we're not also hypervigilant to the world around us and aware and have context. So, and that's the master.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I often refer to the second most popular TED talk of all time with Jill Bolt Taylor. I expect you've seen the one I mean, where she was some sort of neuroscientist and had a left brain stroke in the shower, and was,
did see that one? Yes,
she was able to work out what's happening to her because of her skills and extraordinary recounting of what happened to her as a result, and of her struggles to get help. She realized at times during the course of this she needed help, and she recounts it very humorously. It's very funny, as well as being incredibly profound. But it so clearly shows the roles of the two sides of the brain, because her left brain was sort of on the blink, you know, and so it was coming in and out. And when it came in, she realized she was in trouble and she had to do some practical stuff. And it kind of shows you how the left brain facilitates our ability to manipulate the world and do stuff. Which is fantastic, of course, and I think McGilchrist credits civilization to the left brain, basically. It's that important, language, everything. But, the right brain, as soon as the left brain went on the blink, she had the most unbelievable spiritual experience of, like, connectedness to the universe and love and all these cosmic events going on around her. And she wasn't at all worried, of course, about saving her life during that. But it's extraordinary that we encapsulate both those things, because they're obviously totally different views of life, but they actually contradict each other in many ways. You know, right. They directly contradict each other. You know, the left brain says, I'm separate, I can do this, and it acts on that. I'm a separate person. Whereas the right brain says, actually, I'm just part of everything. So that it's very strange what's going on there. And then you have, as you were referring to, Ron, you have this joining bridge here, which sort of mediates between these two aspects of ourselves, which, you know, it's a paradox. We can't get our head around how we can be, both those things could be true, but they do seem to both be true. And somehow this joining bridge is the sort of genius bit that works this all for us and helps us to encapsulate them both in our lives. So do you want to say a bit more, Ron, about this
job? Yeah, that's the corpus callosum. Yeah. And it's so interesting when you get into looking at it. By the way, I always say that women have a bigger corpus callosum than men.
Right.
And they can do this back and forth between the two hemispheres, I think, better than men can. And so I'm very glad that we're seeing more of a female influence in medicine, because for the longest time, medicine was just dominated, male dominance. And so I think that's part of why it became a little bit unbalanced to the left side of the brain. And now with the advent of more women in medicine, I think we're seeing that the right brain aspect of healthcare is coming in better than it ever did before. However, the corpus callosum can facilitate communication, but it can also block communication between the two hemispheres. So there is an element of a willingness to be open to both sides. And I don't always see that from a lot of my, in my medical school training. There was a kind of reluctance to look at the big picture. Why? I don't know. I think a part of it is this idea that we have to prove everything scientifically down to the nth degree. And in the process of getting so focused, we lose the big picture. And so I think if we can bring the big picture back in, that is integrative medicine. It's integrating the two elements rather than seeing them as opposed. They are just two fields of thinking that need to be brought into focus if we're going to really help this very complex illness we call cancer.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. One of the things I think I gleaned from McGilchrist was the fact that this, what you described as this ability to suppress that happens in the corpus callosum, it has its advantages in that we can kind of move the view, if you like, from one side to the other with it as appropriate. You know, I think it's not necessarily a negative, I think is what I'm saying. It is something we can positively use in order to get the best out of situations that we're in. So to come back with you, Kirsten, we talked a little bit about the way this plays out in the health of the nation. And what I want to explore now is what Ron described as whole brain medicine. So tell me a bit about what you think this might look like and some of its founding principles.
Yeah, I think that, and to go back a little bit to what Dr. Ron was saying, I think that what's happened is we've kind of evolved into wanting, I think it's human nature to feel like we're in control. And right. I think that the brain, focusing on that part, enabled us to feel that we're in control. We can categorize something, we can measure something, we can deal with it in that way. But I think that in doing so, it did work medically for a long time. When medicine first started, we had tuberculosis, we had things that were treatable that way. But now that we have these complex illnesses, we haven't really moved out of that, and that's where we need to go. We still need to, of course, treat those things. But I think that the whole person medicine is really honoring that right side as well, and bringing in social aspects, what's going on in that person's life, what is their sense of purpose. There was actually a study that I will never forget. It was about it was with ovarian cancer patients. And the study was about eudaimonic well-being. And I remember, look, I was like, I don't know what eudaimonic means. So I had to look. Right. But after I figured out what that means, it was sense of purpose. And those women that had had a sense of purpose in their life had significantly better overall survival than those who didn't. And that alone, I mean, right there, we're starting to see the consequences this has in our overall health and our ability to manage disease and fight disease. And I don't know if I like the word fight, but to really be well again. So I think that that's the whole brain medicine. And we still need our algorithms, but we can stray from those algorithms a little bit based on the person. And that's where the right brain comes in, based on the whole person and using both the right and the left brain to guide what we're doing.
A really good example of that is, you know, the Reardon Clinic where we work. Dr. Hugh Reardon was a friend of Linus Pauling. And Linus Pauling was a, you know, two-time Nobel Prize winner, not only for his chemistry, but also world peace. So he was a guy, he was a scientist that was using both sides of his brain. And a really good example of that that relates to the Reardon Clinic is that Dr. Reardon was very interested in giving intravenous vitamin C for various conditions. And he got that interest from Linus Pauling. Pauling looked at vitamin C, which you would say, okay, vitamin C, we understand what that does in terms of nutrition. Well, Pauling looked a lot bigger. He understood that if we go beyond just giving the daily, you know, the whatever 200 milligrams a day recommended daily allowance, that it had other effects. It had broader effects that he thought could be helpful against the common cold, just for that. But then he took it even further and saw that really high doses were helpful to cancer patients, that there was a whole nother mechanism that came about when you expanded your thinking about vitamin C. And so the Reardon Clinic, is what Dr. Reardon did, is he took that insight that Pauling had and then came back to left brain science and was able to show how at higher doses, vitamin C was more effective against cancer. And it also ties into like the fungal link to cancer. Most doctors don't think that fungi could be a part of the cancer process. And what do we do about it? Turns out that high dose vitamin C is antifungal. So again, here's the left brain and the right brain talking to one another. What we've done, I think this is the big thing about the corpus callosum. Let's get the conversation going, because if we expand our thinking and use both sides of our brain, we're going to have much better results against this common enemy, shall we say, this common factor that is threatening so many people's lives, namely cancer. If we look at it from the big picture, we can discern ways of conquering it that we wouldn't be able to discern if we were just sticking with left brain thinking only.
Very interesting. Yeah, Linus Pauling that you're describing there. Yeah, the fact he got these two seemingly disconnected Nobel Prizes is a demonstration of the fact that he was a very broad-based person in that way. And it's interesting, really, if we're talking about whole brain medicine, but whole brain science is another thing, actually, isn't it?
There's another one, yes.
Whole brain science is quite different. And of course, it's quite commonly the case that the exceptional scientists are these exceptional people who actually are very broad-based in that way. I mean, Einstein dabbled in all sorts of things and had a lot to say about a lot of subjects other than relativity. So, yeah, I think it's very interesting, this the engagement of the whole brain that way. Another thing that I think is quite fascinating is that this path of left brain science, if you like, which is like evidence, 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 evidence all the way, you know, it was rather curious to me that we've seem to have walked this path in order to get to the point where now the evidence is showing that a lot of the things that were thought of as very right brain and woo-woo actually are scientifically provable now, It's like we're going around in a big circle. We've gone from intuitive knowledge, you know, it's built into Ayurveda X thousand years ago, you know, they did things. It goes through this phase of being utter woo-woo because you can't prove it. Now you can prove it, and it's coming back to being science. And so in a way, we're reconnecting these parts of ourselves, but going through the left brain, which is...
Exactly. It's all left brain neuroscience, right?
Yes,
it is. To like do all this research and then to figure out, oh, wait, we need to go back the other way.
Right. Yeah. It's fascinating.
So,
the whole field of consciousness now is people are talking about consciousness. Mm-hmm. We are conscious about a thing, but consciousness is, how are we consciousness? Why are we consciousness? What is our level of consciousness? Because a lot of people, their consciousness is so narrow that they can only see one part of the whole pie. They're only looking at one part of it. And when we look broadly, then we can see the holistic dynamic of what's going on. Because I think with cancer, especially, if you just are looking at the tumor, you're kind of missing the point as to what's going on in the body that's allowing the tumor to arise. It's actually, we're finding out that cancer is a regression of the cell back to a very primitive type of functioning that is very, very destructive and selfish. The cancer is the selfish cell, and healthy cells learn how to work together. Cancer cells only want to survive, and they represent a more primitive type of functioning. So really, you could say that whole brain thinking is an evolutionary step that we humans need to take big time if we're going to survive in the world that we're in right now.
I completely agree with you. Yeah, absolutely. That is, there's too much of the going backwards, which is divisive and destructive, basically. You're right. That's what's happening on a grand scale at the moment. And it can be pointed to as being allied to a regression into more left brain view of the world, which has it's held sway for too long, and we're struggling to evolve from it. But it's like there is quite a strong move in that direction, but you sort of wonder whether it's going to happen in time, you know.
Robin, it's almost a reflection of what's happening in our world. It's a reflection of isolation. And we're becoming more and more isolated with social media and being separated and, you know, working from home. I mean, I do that, but
yeah,
you know, just not being together as much. And we're seeing, you know, the biopsychosocial movement is showing that actually being in connection with others and working together and sharing purpose does affect our health. Mm. So you can look at
cancer as a metaphor for the world right now.
Yeah.
And we see it in politics. We see it in relationships. We see it in how farming, you know, farming methods. I mean, mm-hmm. you can take any area of society and realize that if you're looking at it too narrowly, there is your cancer. It's a regressionistic type effect that's occurring in an attempt to survive. And unfortunately, it's the wrong direction. If we're going to survive, we've got to think more holistically or integratively. See, I really like the term integrative medicine because it's really making space for both sides of the equation, but it begs that the two talk to one another. So this whole idea of the anatomy of the brain is a huge metaphor for what we need to do for our world, not just medicine, but for the whole world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Things that's well known about human beings is that we don't like to change very much, but if we get an absolute crisis, then we might, right. Is the way it works. Yeah, and cancer, of course, is one of those for individuals. Very often, of course, you're the same as me, you'll know lots of people who actually chose to take the opportunity of cancer to change their lives wholesale to something much, much more like what they would love it to be in their heart. And that is, of course, is the silver lining, is something good to come out of the horrible thing that is cancer. And when you start to describe the whole planet as having cancer, I agree, that's how it looks. We have got a sort of cancerous disease as a planet. And the same potential is there for the planet, I think, to transform as a result. It's just a question of whether how bad it gets before we change. You know, that's the human question, is how bad do you need it before you're going to change? And I hope we're still got time.
Well, yeah, and that's truly the third medical revolution. You know, the second was recognizing that we need to change. The third is actually instituting it or weaving it into the fabric of institutionalized medicine, so that we can do that whole person care.
Hmm.
Yeah, the way I look upon it is there's a kind of ego that we all have, and our ego tends to be separatistic.
Mm.
We tend to isolate ourselves within our ego structures, but from a more spiritual perspective, taking away the religious connotation of the word spiritual to me sometimes means open. Matter of fact, there was a great little poster that I had in my office where this apple's coming down, and it was instead of being an apple, it was actually the world, and was going to hit the little guy on the head. And
oh yeah,
what it said at the bottom was, open your mind and say ah. Open your mind and say ah.
That's good. I like it.
And that's what we need to do in this world is, hey, wait a minute, stop thinking so in such a narrow way. Widen your perspective. And that's what the corpus callosum can do.
Yeah.
And there is a certain amount of threat when people who are oriented in a totally left brain way, because they feel comfortable in that kind of what seems to be factual. Yeah. This is fact. Okay. But they're not, they may be right about their fact, but they're not seeing the whole perspective. And without the whole perspective, the fact could be true, but it could be also creating a lot of harm if you're not seeing the big picture.
I think if you're not open to it, it seems like an irresolvable conflict, but it's not. When you actually elevate both analysis and synthesis together, you can come to a better understanding while keeping both of the core truths.
Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah, I think, again, going back to Mr. Gilchrist, one of the interesting distinctions he makes, which is good to come back to, is that the right brain is the place where we're appreciating reality as it is in the moment right now, whereas the left brain is like this massive storehouse of stuff we've got there. We collected it all up from wherever, and it's not real as such, but it's, some of it's built on our experience and some of it's built on something we read or whatever it is, to live in the left brain is just to keep referring to this massive library all the time, say, yeah, I've seen that before, I know that, it's a very clever thing. It's like a mega computer, if you like, working things out all the time in order to stay safe, but all the time, of course, reality is passing by, you know, and we're not paying attention. We're actually not there for it because we're busy in our storehouse, looking, checking things up. Very interesting distinction. But so you can sort of see how the deadness that can come over, like medicine has an element of deadness to me. You go into a hospital, has an element of deadness. It's like, you know, it's not a very human place in some way.
Sterile.
Sterile, that's a good word. Yeah. Sterile, yeah. Very, very appropriate word, farcicles, yeah. But, you know, and this is what's missing, is this, the humanity, which is all in the present moment. It's right now. It's happening. And that nobody's looking there. So hence they can bypass the fact that somebody's come in, had their whole life just fall apart because they've just given them a diagnosis of cancer. And they're like, well, you know, suck it up, get on with it. You're just another one in the queue, you know. So whole brain medicine, yes, please. So in your talk, Ron, you used a word that I wasn't familiar with, actually, called sublation. It's an interesting term. I'm going to read a little definition of it first, all right? Just so we know what we're talking about, right? So sublation is a philosophical term that refers to the process where a concept is both preserved and changed through its interaction with another concept. It embodies the idea of lifting up, abolishing, and transcending contradictions within a dialectical framework. So a curious word. But it did the job for you in your talk. Do you want to say why you used it?
Yeah, that's Hegel. It comes from Hegel, but it represents what the corpus callosum could do for us if we open up to the fact that a lot of these situations, we get stuck in that I'm right and you're wrong. Okay, it's a dichotomy, and if we say, well, wait a minute, what can we bring from both sides? Where can we find the higher ground that, in a sense, transcends the conflict? Because there's so much conflict in our world today, academically, philosophically, religiously. And as long as we allow ourselves to remain in the conflict, nothing's going to happen. We're stuck. So sublation is where you literally, go higher, get the bigger perspective on it. And that's exactly what the corpus callosum should be doing for us, is helping us to resolve what oftentimes seems like a conflict. It's not a conflict. It's just that we're looking at it from a lower perspective. If we take the high road philosophically and emotionally, actually be open to the fact that we can find solutions if we're only willing to look. And a lot of people aren't willing to look. I'm right, and that's it. And that's the world that we oftentimes find ourselves in, and it gets us nowhere. And that's why I realized several years ago, we were talking about alternative medicine, like there's standard medicine and there's alternative medicine, and never the twain shall meet. That's not going to ever work. That's why the word integrative medicine, to me, is a huge breakthrough. If people understand that we want the best of both sides, we're not trying to say one's better than the other. It's just that both sides need each other if we're going to make progress.
It takes a village. I always say that. It takes a village.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. I'm glad you brought it around to the integrative medicine because, absolutely. And the whole concept of integrative medicine, that sort of new label appearing, was very refreshing, really, because it did go beyond this whole thing where, it wasn't just one side being right. Both sides were right. For a long time, I remember it was just a slugging match all the time. And people were drawn to, you either go with them or you go with us. And so you could never get the benefit of both things because you're in the midst of a war, basically. It's a war zone. There's no cooperation, no working together for the benefit of the patient. It's just like, well, whose side are you on? And horrible for the patient because they might see, well, there's something over there. Actually, there's something over there too, but you can't have them both. Which one are you going to have? Terrible, terrible situation. And what we need here is to, this is patient-centered medicine proper, isn't it? It actually put the patient in the middle. You say, well, what are all the things that could be useful to this person given their current difficulty? And stop worrying about where it comes from. And even stop worrying about whether philosophically they fit together or not. Doesn't matter, if the mechanism of, acupuncture doesn't happen to work too well with the mechanism of chemotherapy, it doesn't satisfy somebody's brain. By the by, does it help? That's the bigger question, isn't it?
Well,
So we're coming towards the end. It'd be just so great now to really summarize the thrust of integrative medicine, what we're looking for here. in what you've described as whole brain medicine, what the elements are, what the things that we're trying to move away from, leave behind, what the things we're trying to move towards, what the things that really work, the things that do help to really bring the focus on the individuals that we're trying to help, the problems they have.
Yeah, for me, it's just basically looking at the dilemmas that our chronically ill patients come to us with. And Dr. Reardon was always about exploring new options in order to, shall we say, transcend the block or transcend the situation where there's no movement forward. So you've got to look higher and wider and bigger oftentimes in order to overcome the block. And that's that sublation. And really, it's a kind of surrendering that all of us have to do. We have to surrender to the fact that my point of view may not be the whole picture. I have to look bigger and maybe go beyond what I thought was real in order to deal with this life and death situation that my patient is in right now. And what's the best thing for that patient? And the best thing may be a combination of conventional and what we used to call alternative, which I would call more holistic type medicine. Let's get the best of both worlds together, because we gotta find what it is that's gonna help this person live. And me being right is not necessarily gonna help them live. So that is a kind of surrendering, and that's what sublation is, but it's surrendering to a higher level is what it is.
Do you wanna add to that, Kirsten?
Yeah, I think we need to put it all in context. And in truth, our intent, all of us have the same intent for our patients, which is to get them well. So it's not about one side or the other. It's about integrating, using our corpus callosum to bring that together. I think that we seriously need to expand what we mean by care. I think that we need to have patients in nature, focus on human connection, have support groups, music therapy, things like that. And foster reflective attention. I think that that's a big one, because that's how we're going to strengthen that right side and strengthen our corpus callosum. And what I mean by that is spending time in nature, exercise, returning to our body, meditation. There's the big word, meditation. But really strengthening, empowering that right side to help guide our left side so that we can put it all together.
Great. Yeah, that's... block you mentioned there, Ron, which we want to move beyond that for the sake of our patients. I was thinking the other day about 20 years ago, you had the rare patient who had, you know, was termed a spontaneous remission, and they were told, sorry mate, it's the end of the road, you've had it, and they thought, well, maybe not, and they went past that block, and essentially to do that they did embrace an integrative approach. They basically looked outside the box, anything that might help. And the things like spontaneous remission or remarkable recovery or whatever it was seemed to be appropriate then. Now, actually, I'm feeling like, well, they're to a penny almost. Funnily enough, there's so many people are moving beyond. They get told, sorry, there's nothing you can do. And they think, really? And they just... The mindset has changed. People are not prepared to die to order anymore like they were, and they do. They go and look outside the box, and if they're lucky, they find integrative medicine. And so many, many more people are moving past that block simply by widening the view, taking a look at what's out there. And of course, there's remarkable things out there now, actually, which many of which are directly the combination of conventional medicine and a natural or holistic methods. Bringing the two together is remarkably powerful. So, you know, I think it's exciting time. I obviously always wanted to move much faster, but it is accelerating. That's my impression. So it's exciting.
For having us to have this conversation. This is such a...
Look, it's been...
Wish you were here or we were there.
No, it's a great conversation. So I love talking about this stuff. It's really important. It's inspiring. And I think, you know, one of the jobs of Yes to Life all along I've always seen it, was to help people understand that things are moving and they're accelerating and there's a lot of good things happening, so that it's very easy to feel hopeless in a left brain world. It brings on hopelessness. The life is sucked out of it. So I think we've got to put it back in there again by talking about this stuff and how exciting it is. All the things you've just described, Kirsten, how much effect those things, those sort of right brain reflective pursuits, how much effect they actually have on our physical health and well-being. A huge amount, much more than has been acknowledged up to now. And this is new power for everybody.
Right.
Yeah, that third phase of sublation is elevation. You've got to get to a higher level. A lot of times when you're stuck, it's because you're down low, and you've got to get to a higher level where you can see more possibilities. And that's the left brain and the right brain working together, sublimating through the corpus callosum to achieve the goal, which is life and survival and thriving. Thrival. I like the word thrival.
Thrival. Yeah. Okay. That's a new word. Okay. Great. We'll go with that. All right. Well, huge thanks to you both. It's been a real pleasure. And this is a marvelous show for people. I'm sure they're really going to appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, Robin.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. The topic ties in seamlessly with the subject of the two Yes to Life conferences this year, Reclaiming Our True Nature. Our online conference has just come and gone, and I have to say it was spectacular. Our amazing speakers all approached the topic from multiple directions, but all pointed to the same goal of appreciating and embracing the totality of who we are as human beings, and using this as the platform from which to provide healthcare. Recordings from the online conference will be on sale from the Yes to Life online store shortly. That's at shop.yestolife.org.uk. And of course, we still have our in-person conference to come. It's on the 26th of September in central London. This is set to be possibly even more life-changing. So if you want to find out more or book your place, go to conference.yestolife.org.uk. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in again next week when I'll be back with another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.